Hello, and welcome to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show, prescribing hope for healthy families here on American Family Radio. Here's your host, Professor, Pediatric Nurse Practitioner, and Mom of Four, Dr. Jessica Peck.
Well, hey, friends, and welcome to an Ask Dr. Nurse Mama Friday. I love Fridays. Let me tell you, I love the energy change, and I love being able to talk with you about all of the questions that I've been getting throughout the week. And, you know, we're in the summer, and I'm getting a lot of questions about kids who are graduating from high school. Probably that is because of the stage of life that I am in and having experienced it twice myself. I have graduated too. I have two more to go, and I'm getting a lot of questions about that. So today is going to be dedicated to all of those families with a senior who are working on a transition over the summer, whether that is for college, whether that is for going into the workforce, a gap year, whatever it is. If you have kids who are growing up, turning 18, telling you, I'm an adult now, Mom. I'm an adult now. I have to give you a disclaimer. I call this a quasi-adult because it's like, yes, you're an adult, and yet I still pay for your life. So where does that leave me? I don't know. But let me share with you really quick. I have a really great guest for you to help me answer these questions. But let me share with you some encouragement and something that I wrote about this recently. Here is what I wish someone had told me before my first child graduated. I wish they had told me, it's way harder than people say it is. Even when they tell you it's really, really hard. I mean, it's like standing still and smiling while someone just rips your heart out of your chest and you're saying, that's fine, this is fine, everything is fine. That's the brutal truth. You need to allow space for everyone to adjust at their own pace in their own space, because every kid is different. The siblings process it differently. The parents process it differently. You know, I'll have my husband who's saying, it's fine. What's the problem? Just they're graduating. And then the next minute, he's got one of their baby blankets, like crying on the floor of our closet. Sorry, honey, but you know, we all have our own different space that we process things at. But we need to focus on just doing the next right thing in the hour ahead. These are really big transitions that are best taken in little steps. So give yourself some grace and space to be human. You'll also waste too much time wondering what someone else is thinking. You'll wonder, what does my child really think about leaving me? Are they happy to leave me? Are they sad to leave me? Am I happy that they're happy? I want to be happy that they're happy, but I'm a little sad that they don't seem to be as sad. It is much more helpful and encouraging to direct your thoughts to just do what you think is best, what God is telling you, to pour into them and trust Him, trust God for wisdom and peace. The other thing I need you to know is that you're going to mess up. It is inevitable. You will overstep. You will understep. You will ask too much. You will ask too many questions. You will say too little. You'll ask too few questions. You'll assume instead of assure. You'll talk instead of listen. There is grace and restoration and humility and kindness and compassion. Here's another hard truth. Your other kids at home need to know the world will not fall apart when their sibling grows up, and that they are more than enough to give your life meaning and joy at home in the next season. I encourage you to choose grace. Let the little things go. Recognize that as hard as change is for you, it's harder for our kids, even when it doesn't seem that way. So say yes as often you can, as you can. Don't take their emotions personally. And the wisdom that is found in Pooh Bear. Yes, I'm saying Pooh Bear from A.A. Milne, a quote, you are braver than you believe, stronger than you seem, smarter than you think, and loved more than you know. And you are loved, friend, by God. He knows, He sees, He's not surprised by any you arriving at this phase of life. And we need to celebrate a healthy family. Perfect families don't exist, mine included. But there is so much joy in this season of seeing two decades of planting yield a harvest. So I am really excited to invite back as my guest, my favorite guest, my daughter, Shelby, who is going to be a senior in college. And I thought, who better to help me answer questions about how do you survive this college transition than the one who has survived it with me? So Shelby, welcome back to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show. We are always glad to have you here.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
Well, you have survived this. So why don't you just give And just give your perspective. What can parents do to help facilitate that transition? What are lessons that you learned from doing that, and how you've survived to live the tale? What advice do you have to give?
Yeah, I've survived. I still have a year left, but hopefully you get through that one. And as the oldest, I'm definitely the guinea pig, which is okay because, I make my mistakes as a lab rat too. But it is hard looking at this next year of graduating college, what that's going to look like. So looking back on the first days of college, I definitely have a little rose gold lens over that now, rose colored glasses. But at the time, it's hard because you don't really know what you're doing, especially if you're going far away to school. All you know is that one minute you're in your childhood bedroom with your own personal shower and maybe your family dog and like your parents can make you dinner. And the next minute you're in a 9x12 cinder block room, if you're lucky, and you're sharing a shower with 30 other people and you're alone and you don't know what you're doing and you know your family's at home and it's just scary. And it's, there's really nothing that can fully prepare that because everyone's experience is so different and there's not really that linear perfect college starter kit. But I definitely think what was really essential to me navigating that transition was just knowing that I had my parents' support and, they helped me move in, they helped me build whatever, dorm furniture I could fit in my cinder block room. And I knew that they were there on the other side of the phone if I needed them. And I knew that they were 3 hours away if in the worst case scenario, they needed to drive up there and get me. But I think just having that support and knowing that there's a safe place to land when I fall, not if, was really helpful.
Oh, well, that makes me feel really good. Like, I didn't expect you to say that, but I love it. And I think that another thing that we did really, really well, eventually, not at first, was making the agreement to say that we are going to accept that each other has the best intention, because our perception was way off. Like, you're talking about how inside you're thinking, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm scared to death. Now, you didn't come to me and say, oh, mommy, I'm scared to death and I don't know what I'm doing. You said, I've got this. This is no big deal. And I'm thinking, oh, she doesn't even care that she's leaving, and I'm trying to help. And I'm sure your perceptions of, my behavior were off too. So what advice can we share with families who are listening to know that we really need to accept that each other has the best intent, and what each of us is presenting as we're trying to survive and trying to play it cool, both of us? How do we know when that doesn't match, what we're feeling inside and how we're acting?
Yeah, I don't think there's a key ingredient here, but I think what you said about the key to survive is really important, because that's what you're trying to do essentially, and you're trying to do it and make it look really effortless, and especially when you're just got to college, like you don't want anybody to know that you don't have friends and that you don't know what you're doing, even though everybody else is in the exact same position. And at home, like, you don't want your parents to worry about you and think that you can't do it or think that you're, struggling or this was a bad decision. So that's on the, college student side. But then on your side, I also had to learn that it's really hard when there's like a gap at home and there's an empty chair at the dinner table. And, my sister and I have shared a room my whole life and she was now had her own room. And so it definitely is just hard. And you have to just, again, all honesty is always going to be the best policy with that. And it will take some time. It's not like you enter knowing that, okay, I'm going to have each other's best expectations and it'll be perfect, because it won't be. But it should be, like you said, it should be healthy and it should be have those open communication venues that always are safe and you can always call that truce when you need to.
Yeah, because that's how I felt. Like, I don't want you to see me crying and feel like the world is falling apart. I don't want you to feel guilty that you're going away. But I also don't want you to see me completely stoic and feel like, oh, she doesn't care at all. Like, her life's just going to go on like normal. It is so hard. And then when you are apart for those first few weeks, just like you said, I mean, it's hard because you're just thinking about how you are transitioning. But I'm thinking, yeah, there's an empty chair at home. And what do we do? Do we change where we sit at dinner? Do we not? And we think, oh, we're going to do this, but oh, she's not here. So do we wait and do this when you come home, or does life go on? Do we just do that anyway? Do I call you every day? Do I text you every day? Am I texting you too much? Do you think that I don't care that I'm not checking in on you? Or do you think that, oh my gosh, would you stop stalking me because I'm fine? Those kinds of things are really, really hard, I think, to navigate. But you're right. Just having that open conversation and just saying, like, hey, what would be a good amount to call you? Like, how often should I call or text you? And then making sure that I try anytime I can, you know, to drop whatever I'm doing. I think those are really hard. Well, let's go, Shelby, to that. Let's go to the college drop-off. Let's talk to those kids who are going away to school and go to that moment where, oh my gosh, it's so embarrassing to have your parents there on campus, but you also need us, but we don't know what we're doing, like what do we do? What advice do you have for that weekend? There's a lot of families who are going away to orientation or going for that drop off. Speak to speak to your peers first. What advice do you have for them?
Oh, to my peers. Well, first of all, I would like to just shout out where I go to school, Baylor, because they have this program where all the upperclassmen come and help the freshmen move into their dorms. So they empty out the cars and bring everything up three to five flights of stairs. And at the time, I thought it was the most embarrassing thing in the whole entire world, because I was like, oh no, like these older, you know, college students, they're seeing all my stuff and they're seeing like us in my giant, you know, our family giant car that's like doesn't have a handle and it's falling apart. But it gets us places. But now looking back, they're not paying attention to what you know, are doing or not doing. They're just trying to help you and help you have a good experience. So first, just try to know that it's not as embarrassing as you think it is, because you will be, you know, your face will be flushed and you'll just think, but everybody is going through the exact same thing. Everybody has little siblings hanging along, and that's not a burden. That's something that is really grateful, because they're getting to see you set the way and lead the example. And I think it's just really important that we embrace our families being there. And one way I think we've really connected doing this is just going out to eat and just finding a lot of community and relationship building time over dinner. And so I think it's helpful to pick a place ahead of time. That way you know exactly where you're going, and then that's just a safe place that's not on campus, and you can just kind of decompress and just let your emotions out that you've been stuffing down. And it was a way to kind of get my dad involved, because, you know, he's trying to help and he's trying not to break the Target furniture, which is also like falling apart. And so he got very excited to pick out a restaurant each time he came up to visit. But that's one piece of advice I would have.
That is a good piece of advice. And I think, you know, and from the parents' perspective, it's you have to give your kid a lot of grace and space and recognize that they have a lot of conflicting emotions inside that they're trying to hide, that they don't, you know, maybe see well, and they don't feel safe enough really to do that. But one thing that we experienced was that, you know, when you do have that alone time with your parents, sometimes you've just been holding that emotion in and trying so hard to maintain the image that you think, you know, you're trying to just be strong and be brave and be, I've got this on my own, and you know, that kind of thing. But then when you get with your safe space, you kind of fall apart, and then the family's like, wait, what just happened? Like, we just got to see you and you're gonna fall apart. But recognizing that's actually kind of a compliment, right?
Yeah, no, it's really sad that we do take out a lot of those emotions on the people we're closest to, which again is just a result of us feeling safe with them. And that's something I really had to learn, was getting through those emotions and just processing them and talking about, you know, the stress or the fear I was feeling with you in a healthy way, instead of just, okay, I see you now, like I finally feel safe, I'm just gonna let it all out and just go into full rage mode. And so definitely I think it's good to be honest with ourselves, especially as college students who are just starting, and just to acknowledge that we're scared and just to acknowledge that it's not perfect and we don't know what we're doing. And that's not embarrassing, that's not unnormal, it's not uncommon. That's exactly where you're supposed to be, and it's healthier just to acknowledge that in the moment than to try to sweep it under the rug.
It is. It requires a lot of grace, a lot of forgiveness, a lot of clear communication, a lot of starting over. There's such power in saying, hey, you know what? I did not handle that the best. I'm really sorry. Will you please forgive me? Can we start again? Can we try again? I mean, I think that's just what you've got to do. And it's hard. You know, sometimes working through those things can be really, really hard. But those are important. I think the other thing that's important that I've learned is that if you're dropping your kid off for college, you need to decide exactly what that goodbye is going to look like before you go. Because I'll tell you, as a parent, it is really, really hard to let go. You're like, okay, goodbye, but, you know, I'll be back in, you know, do you need anything else? One more trip to the store or whatever it is, you know, that you need. Decide together what that is going to look like, and then stick to that plan and go. It is good. Well, when we come back, I want to talk about some of the temptations that face college students or adults who are just no longer in high school. Maybe they're working. What are those temptations? How do you be grounded in your faith when your faith is really your own? It's not your parents anymore. We'll talk about that when we come back. Meet Kelsey. When she found out she was pregnant, she wasn't sure where to turn. But after meeting with the counselors at a preborn network clinic who loved and supported her, and after hearing her baby's heartbeat on a free ultrasound, she chose life.
When a mother looks at her child through a sonogram, it does something to you. You know, I ended up deciding to keep my son, who is now 5 years old today. He's amazing. He brings absolute joy to my heart. I could not imagine life without him. Not only did they help me save his life, they saved my life.
By introducing a woman to her baby on ultrasound, a baby's chance at life doubles. If you have the means, would you consider a leadership gift to save babies in a big way? Your tax-deductible donation of $5,000 will sponsor Preborn's entire network for 24 hours, helping to rescue 200 babies. To donate, dial pound 250 and say the keyword baby. That's pound 250 baby, or donate securely at preborn.com. That's preborn.com. For Dr. Nurse Mama, I'm Jessica Peck. Welcome back, friends. Well, I think as parents, we could have no greater hope than that is a question that our kids would ask as they leave our house, that that would guide their life. What would Jesus do in this moment? And it can be really scary. But welcome back to Ask Dr. Nurse Mama Friday, where we are talking about transitioning kids from being kids to being adult and being in that transition period, whether your child is staying around town to go to school, going to a local college, a community college, whether they're going out into the workforce or whether they're going away to college. I'm here with my daughter, Shelby, who's about to be a senior in college, and we have lived and survived to tell the tale of how we did it and to share some advice in those transitions. And so, Shelby, I just want to dive back in and just say that, you know, I can speak from a parent's perspective, from a mom's perspective, that as our kids are not in high school anymore, where high school is pretty strict, you know, even if you're homeschooled, your private school, your public school, there are expectations that go along with that. You're not 18 yet in most cases, and life is pretty, you know, prescribed. It's pretty safe and pretty structured. But it just feels like, you know, kids turn 18 and they pull that card on parents all the time. I'm 18 now. You can't tell me what to do. And like I told you before, it's hard for parents because we're like, yeah, but we don't want to revert to the, as long as you live in my house, you will obey my rules. But I think the nightmare that a lot of parents have is that, you know, they, kids face a lot of temptations as they go through that. There are temptations to drink, to have risky dating relationships. I mean, all kinds of things. Like our parent minds are going crazy right now. What is the reality of that? And what advice do you have for families navigating that and having those discussions about what are our standards going to be?
Yeah, so the first thing you look for when you get to college, I feel like I can say this pretty universally, is going to be community. You're going to want friends, you're going to want people so you don't have to go to the dining hall alone or you don't have to study alone, and you're just missing your family, so you're just going to look for friends. And so that community that you form at the beginning, it might not be exactly the people in the community you'll walk out on the other side with, but the types of relationships that you form and the types of environments you place yourself in at the beginning are really going to prescribe where you end up toward the end. And so it's really important when you first get there to find healthy community. That's why I think going to a church is vital and really important and crucial to getting that Christ-centered friendships formed and helping you grow in your faith instead of kind of dial back as you go into college, as is really commonly seen. But I think temptations, they pretty much all arise within that community or lack thereof. And this might, you know, sound scary, but I think it's something I didn't realize growing up right before I went to college, is that it is way easier to get into trouble than you think. It's hard because...
Okay, that's scaring me.
Sorry.
Okay. All right.
That's why, you know, it's hard because a lot of kids, I think, especially, you know, where I grew up, the environment I grew up really sheltered, and they didn't know, you know, they had really strict limitations on what they could and couldn't do imposed upon them. And so they get to college and it's like a free-for-all, you know, it's like they get a, you know, gift card to their favorite store and there's no parents and they can figure out how to turn off their phones and they can, you know, if you're looking for something in particular, you can probably find it no matter what school you go to. You know, if it's a really big public college or even smaller Christian colleges, people looking for a community that's maybe not the most uplifting, they usually find each other. And so,
okay, that's terrifying. Thanks for that encouragement. It's important for us to acknowledge the reality of that.
Yeah, it was shocking to me too, honestly. And it was really sad just to see a bunch of people like in my residence hall or just people I encountered with, just the kind of the lifestyle that they felt they had to pursue just to be accepted and just to find people. And so that's why I think it's so important before you go to college just to know what you're looking for, because then you'll know when you found it, and just to already know the values that you have. And like, you know, we would do a lot of walking through what if situations. Yeah. Like, how would you respond if that was kind of a thing that we did in high school, and just figuring out, you know, how I'd get out of somewhere I don't want to be. And so then going to college and navigating it on my own, I already knew what my response would be, and I was already firm in those convictions. And so I felt like I was able to say no in a graceful and loving way, and then at the same time find people who would also say no, and then we could, you know, do other things together and still have fun and still have a really great time in a healthy way too. So it's just important to know what you're looking for before you go, know your heart behind things, and also be able to respond in a gracious way. That way you can keep those bridges and outreach venues open.
I think that's so wise. And talking about community, and you're talking about that from your experience in going to college, but you have a lot of friends who didn't go to college, who or either went to community college or joined the workforce, and they faced the similar things. And what you say about seeking community is so, so, so important. And I also, you know, I'll speak from just the mom's perspective and those what if scenarios. That is a tool that we used a lot, because fear-based tactics, let me just tell you, parents, they don't work. We know from research that they don't work. They're very effective in generating fear, but they are not effective in motivating behavior change. So it was important to me to not, you know, come down your throat and say, you know, oh, this could happen. And did you read this in the news? And this, you know, you could die, like that kind of thing. Although, I mean, sometimes I
you
did.
Could,
like,
yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And sometimes, I found it hard to restrain that. But here's my tip for parents. I use the some kids, what I call the some kids method. I'll say, you know, some kids find this temptation. Some kids find it hard to do this. Some kids may find themselves in a situation like this. What would you do if that was you? And we would talk it through. And it's interesting too, because, you know, your response may be different than one of your siblings' responses, because it has to be a way that's comfortable for your personality, something that you feel would be realistic. Like, sometimes I would say, well, why don't you say this? And you would say, I would never say that, which is true. You know, like, you would never say something that was counterintuitive to your personality, to your temperament. It had to be something in there. But coming up with it on your own, I think, was really, really helpful. Well, you talk, Shelby, about part of that community is finding church. And no matter where you are, when you're 18, there is something that, I mean, your parents aren't telling you, okay, you have to go to church. They're not dropping you off at Sunday school anymore. And it can be really hard, because you may even have some kids who are really invested in their youth group, who are going, who have community. Then all of a sudden, it's not the youth group anymore. They have the little, you know, everybody crying luncheon and say, oh, you're graduated, you're gone. And they maybe they don't have a young adult group at the church. And so what is the importance of finding a church, and how has that helped you in your Christian walk?
Yeah, it's done more than helped. It's really shaped and lifted me up a lot of times when I needed to be. But especially like if you go to a college away from home and it's like in a college town, there's going to be a lot of churches you can choose from. And I definitely think it's okay at first to kind of try it out and, you know, take the first month of school, because it really should be a family and it should be a place that you're going to spend a lot of time. So finding a place that, you know, you think is solid spiritually and that you can find community is really important. And then once you find that place, like, go more beyond than just attending on Sundays. You have to get involved in a small group, which is with people your age, and also finding a place to serve has been really fun and instrumental. But small groups just been vital because it provides me with, you know, 8 other girls about my age, and we're able just to talk about what we're struggling with and just explore God's word together. And so seeing them face to face once a week just really provides that consistent check-in, like, how are they doing, how am I doing? And then finding somewhere to serve is super fun because, you know, I get to either greet with my roommates or lead a small group with one of them. And so that's also really special because so much of college is about making sure that you're okay and making sure that my groceries are bought and that my grades are good and that, you know, all these responsibilities from home are gone because you're on your own and you're taking care of yourself. But serving really helps turn your eyes outward and helps you get to know the community that you're placed in for 4 years and get to know the city in which you live and its people, and also just serve them joyfully alongside your friends. So it's awesome. But I also realized that, you know, if students aren't going away to school, if they're going to a community college, it could be really hard to find that church community. And it might be hard because, you know, my local church didn't have a young adult ministry that was very large or substantial, you know, with people my age. And so it might be okay to look for a change in that. And it might be okay to find a different church, maybe a little further away, that does have that community, because it is so important. We are not meant to walk the Christian life alone, and it's so important to find people that will spur you on and encourage you toward good works. And so finding that may take a little bit of adjusting, even if you're still at home.
I love that you encourage people to be persistent. And so again, you know, flipping this and speaking from the mom perspective, I feel like another thing that we did well as a family, believe me, there's plenty of things we messed up on, and we've shared those. If you want to know more about that, you can read about them in my book, Behind Closed Doors. But one thing I think we did really well was that as a family, we made it a practice to visit churches when we were traveling or when we were on vacation. So there's a lot of practical skill sets that go along with that. You've got to get on the website. You've got to look at the doctrine. You've got to see, what do they believe? Is it consistent with, you know, my beliefs and what I consider to be, you know, sound theology? Is it a church that's based on God's word and, you know, those kinds of things? And then what are their services look like? What time do we go? Where do we go? And it's been kind of fun because we have had a lot of really great experiences. I mean, we have been to little tiny new church plants. We've been to historic older churches. We've been to traditional churches. We've been to more contemporary churches. We've been to college churches and all of those things. But there is something about that as a family walking into a new church and being the visitor that reminds you of how it feels to be the visitor, you know, to think, okay, I don't know anybody here. Were they friendly? Were they not? But also the bigger thing of finding community and realizing that, you know, the church is not a church, you know, a specific church, especially if you go to the same church growing up, you know, like we had experience when you were growing up. But just recognizing that you can go anywhere and find a body of believers to connect. I think that's one thing that we did really well. Do you think so?
Yeah, and I think that's the beauty of today is that, you know, after COVID, so many churches started streaming. So even if you don't travel a lot, you can still, before you go to school, visit churches virtually and just see what their live stream is like and see what the worship is like and see what the message is like. And then again, use online websites to explore what ministries they have and what you can get involved in.
And I think it's good for you to talk about just having a process too, because it seems like from watching your experience, it was really hard to do those initial visits, like to go the first time, even to go the second time. But then once you're plugged in, it's like easy. It's way downhill after that. And you're so glad that you did it because of the community, because of the support. So what encouragement would you have for young people who are like you, who are thinking, yeah, I went once and it was not so great. How would you encourage them to be persistent?
Well, it was hard for me at first because I didn't have a car. So, you know, like my first weekend at college, I was like, oh, I need to go to church in the morning, but I don't know who to go with. I don't know anyone yet, and I can't drive myself. And, you know, the church I go to is like 20 minutes away. But that was so helpful, and that was definitely, I think, God's provision because I got to meet other girls who were kind enough to drive me. And also, I was really surprised when the next week they asked if I wanted to go again. And I was like, well, I thought people, you know, just went for a few weeks and then started to trail off. And the fact that it's been 3 years now, we still go and sit together every Sunday at 9 o'clock in the morning. You know, we had to wake up a bit earlier to get there. And it's just really special to, again, find the people that will go with you consistently because they'll hold you accountable to actually wake up, to actually get there and to go. And just, it'll get better. You know, the first 2 months feels like you're at summer camp. It's going to be weird, but then eventually you figure it out and you can take the training wheels off a little bit and get off and go.
Well, one thing that was really helpful to you is other adults there who poured into college kids, because you're thinking about college kids, especially they are living, like you said, in a cinder block dorm, potentially, you know, they maybe are eating cafeteria food or those kinds of things. But even so, even kids who are staying at home, any young adults who are visiting a church, you know, there may be families out there thinking, oh, hey, my kids are really little, or, oh, my kids are grown. But there is a message for all of us in here. How can adults who maybe don't have kids at this life phase, how can they be alert for young adults who are single or, you know, just starting to work or just starting to go to college? How can they be intentional about making sure they feel welcome in their church?
There's three things here, I think.
Oh, goodness. Okay. Let's go.
I would say food, mentorship, and service. So with food, there is a family at the church I go to, and they would feed like 20 college students every single Sunday and just have us all over, and we'd be sitting in every chair they owned. But it doesn't have to be, you know, for 20 people, this large affair. It just can just be inviting one or two, or just finding those people you consistently pour into, just having conversation with them. Again, the dining hall may or may not be that good. And so just allowing them just to spend time with your family and maybe with your kids, because in college is weird. You don't really see kids anymore, and you kind of forget that they're there, like, except for your siblings. And I remember the first time I saw, like, a baby at a coffee shop, and you know, it had been a few weeks, and it's a culture shock. So I think it's really important to, again, just see those healthy family dynamics and spend time with them. And then also through mentorship, my co-life group leader and I have a mentor named Angela. She's an empty nester now, but every week, again, she just meets with us and just, you know, it can be 20 minutes, it could be 2 hours, but we either go on walks or sometimes play pickleball or go out to coffee. And she just really invests into us, and she shares her experience as a college student. And it's been really valuable just learning from her wisdom and everything that she's gone through. And I know that she'll be like a lifelong friend, and that's been really special. But then also service, it's just finding ways for college students to get involved. One of my roommates is a film minor, and so at our church, they found ways for her to join the film crew and help film for online services. Or if someone wants, you know, it's a journalism major like I am, helping them write the newsletter or the Bible study that gets sent out. There's a place for everyone to serve. They just have to know it's there. And so it might take a little bit of your initiating that and stepping out and showing them where they're wanted and where their gifts are really celebrated.
And that makes me think of the scripture. Don't let anyone look down on you because you are young, but set an example for the believers in speech and word and deed. Well, I hope that you're finding this encouraging. Listen, we have done the quasi-adult transition. We live to tell the tale here. And when we come back, I want to ask you, Shelby, about just the kind of negative perceptions that people have about Gen Z and what you see that's good and ways that we can encourage Gen Z in speech and word and deed. We'll be right back.
And my father, your great-grandfather, fought in World War II.
Really?
He was a gunner on the big ship out in the Pacific Ocean.
Wow.
Your great-grandmother did her part, too.
Was she on a ship?
Oh, no. She stayed back home. She and a lot of her friends worked really hard in a factory because the men had gone off to war.
Ooh.
And they held scrap metal drives to help in the war effort. The folks back home were heroes, too.
Here at the American Family Association, we consider you the heroes back home. As you fulfill your responsibility of caring for your family day to day, your partnership with us is crucial as we fight the enemies of freedom in America. Thank you for your commitment to the American Family Association.
Grandpa, what's a scrap metal drive?
Let's get some cookies, and I'll tell you all about it.
Welcome back, friends, and I'm so excited to have you here for Ask Dr. Nurse Mama Friday. And today the question we're essentially answering is, how do you survive your kids graduating from high school? And how do we encourage those kids that we know who are in our communities, in our church groups, in our families, in our circles, who are making this life transition? It is a hard time to grow up, Shelby. It really is. And I'm here with my daughter, Shelby, who is going to be a senior in college. And we're just sharing our experience and answering some questions about this. And one of the questions that I want to go back to, Shelby, that I think we didn't quite finish, and I want to finish this, is helping parents and young people balance authority and respect. Like, when those times it seems like the boundaries are kind of gray, you know, it's maybe you're getting a job, you have your own money, you're paying for something, you're not paying for something else, you're living sometimes in our house, sometimes not in our house. How do you encourage kids out there, young people, young kids your age, right, to balance authority and respect? What communication strategies did you find helpful, or maybe even not helpful, in navigating that transition?
Honesty, again, I'm going to keep circling back to that, but there may have been boundaries when I was in high school that might not apply when you're in college, because it definitely is weird when, you know, you're at college and everyone's like, let's go get ice cream, and it's midnight, and you just go because that's what you do, and you're studying, and you're kind of miserable for your test tomorrow, but it'll be over. And then you go home, and your younger siblings are asleep by 8 or maybe 10, and you don't know what to do because your body physically can't go to sleep that early. So again, it just takes a lot of honest communication and just maybe revisiting some of those things, because you're right, I don't feel like an adult. I don't look like an adult. I look like I'm like 15 years old still. But it definitely is hard when, you know, you're living on your own and you're taking care of yourself physically and spiritually and mentally, and you're paying for some things but not all the things, and it's just hard to figure that out. So it just takes a lot of, I think, humility on both sides and just a lot of open conversations. Me realizing that I am not in charge of everything. I can't do everything. I need your help still. I'm grateful for your help still. But also, I really appreciate how you didn't hold that over me or make me feel guilty or belittled because of that. And you know, our relationship or hurts in our relationship were never taken back. Why, you know, pay for this and I take care of all of this and you're not on your own yet. And there were just no strings attached. You just loved me, which is really kind and I think really helpful to navigating this really tough phase of growing up.
Well, I definitely fell on my face a lot, you know, because it is really hard. And I think that having those honest conversations, just saying, okay, this is awkward. Like, let's talk about where you're going to tell me where you're going and when you're not. And then just kind of, I think, sharing our experience with each other, just saying, hey, from my perspective, I do have kids who are still at home asleep. And so how can we be respectful of them, just from a framework of, you know, living in the household with just basic respect. It's really, really hard. But I think that having those open conversations with, I'm all flustered. You're giving me all these compliments and it's just making me, you know, it's making me kind of teary and emotional. Thank you, Shelby. That's, you're a joy. Well, you know, yeah, my board operator here is going to offer me some Kleenex. And let me tell you, but it's been such a joy too. It's so fun. Honestly, I think it's fun to have adult kids, because now we're moving to that phase where I'm not just your mom. We are friends now, and we enjoy spending time together and having adventures together. And there's some things that we can do because you're an adult now, you know, that we couldn't do before, some conversations that we can have, and just recognizing that I cannot control every everything that you have. And I feel like I had to learn to give away some of that control before you graduated, because if it's just overnight, like, okay, we're going to live just like you're 17 until the day I drop you off for college, well, that's not going to prepare you very well. So we had to learn that. But in talking about this balancing of authority and respect, Shelby, I think that there's a perception that college kids today, oh, this is going to sound really offensive, but I'm just going to tell you that's out there. College kids today are generally disrespectful, like that, you know, they don't have a respect for our a country, for authority, you know, that there's just that general perception. And I hear so many negative things said about Gen Z, that they're not good workers, they don't have a good work ethic, that they, you know, just don't carry on their family's values or things like that. But we know that that's not true. Like, we know that there are good things. And I hear a lot of times people will say to you or to me, like, oh, I'm so glad I'm not growing up now. This is a terrible time to grow up. Like, what kind of message are we giving? So what are the good things that you see in your generation? Give us some encouragement and push against that stereotype that that does not define everyone in your generation.
I think each generation has to understand that sometimes respect is not always reciprocal. And that might be from parents to kids, or, you know, kids to parents. And there's definitely situations where if you're being disrespected, you need to stand up for yourself, or you need to find someone who can step in and stand up for you. And it is hard from a Christian worldview sometimes, because we're going to be disrespected, whether it's by peers or sometimes by professors, just things like that, things where we feel like it's unfair, this is not right. You're looking down on me as a Gen Z, and you're, you know, not treating me the way that I think I should be treated. And again, sometimes there's situations where you have to stand up for yourself, but also sometimes you just need to extend grace, and just sometimes the more loving thing to do is just to act as Jesus would, and just to give that respect unconditionally, whether it's parents and you think they're being unfair about curfew or tracking your location, and just considering the cost of those conversations and picking which battles you want to fight. And just ultimately, even if you are having those hard conversations and asking for some boundaries to be readjusted, extending respect, you can still extend respect while adjusting priorities and adjusting expectations for each other. So that's just one little thing I think I've noticed a lot among my peers. But also, I think that we really encourage each other, and we're very open to conversations. We're very open to becoming friends and joining with people from other walks of life, which of course can be a slippery slope and lead to a lot of compromise convictions. But also at the same time, I think it is important that we at least open the door to those conversations with the people sitting next to us in class, because you never know what their walk of life is. You never know what their beliefs are. And a big misconception I have about going to a Christian school is that everybody would be a Christian, and they're not. And no matter what school you go to, you're going to find people who don't know the Lord. And if we just automatically push them away and just close those off, close conversations off, we still have to sit next to them for an entire semester. We still have to work alongside them in our student job, or we still have to, maybe they're your roommate in your dorm. And so I think what our generation does well is just bridge those barriers, and we just go over them and try to reach the other.
Well, I talk to a lot of grandparents, and frankly, a lot of parents who say, my kid won't talk to me. I can't get them to talk to me. And what I would say to that, and something that I learned, is that you can't lead with lecturing. You do have to have some posture of respect towards who you're talking to as just a human, you know? And a lot of times we just lead with lecturing. So what I hear is, oh, you know, you start the conversation and it goes like, young people these days, or we're going to have some discussion on politics, or, you know, something about the culture and say how horrible it is, or that kind of thing. What are good questions that we can ask? Because I feel like we have really good conversations. We talk about things all the time. What are questions that parents can ask? What encouragement would you give to parents to initiating conversation with their young people if maybe that's just not there yet? Like, that's the conversation is a little awkward, it's a little stilted, and they're thinking, what do we talk about in this transition phase? How do you start that communication?
Yeah, keep asking. I mean, something I've learned with having conversations with people, no matter what age, people love to talk about themselves. And so sometimes you might not be able to get in a word about yourself, or they may walk away not knowing your hometown. And that's okay, because you know theirs and you can know a lot of other things about them. And something that we learn in journalism a lot is to not ask questions that lead. And so a lot of times older people will come up to me and they'll say I'm being taught some false doctrine in college, and then automatically assume that I've adopted it and that it's become a core of who I am. And those questions are just automatically a little bit hurtful, and they automatically discourage me from answering and going into in-depth conversations. But if you just ask a very open-ended question, you never know what you're going to get. And then that can lead to further conversations about beliefs or other things like that. But just asking, what are you learning about? Instead of, oh, I've heard you're learning about this horrible thing, and what can we do to fix it? Here's a book that I need you to read, which has also happened before. I got an interesting library going on. But just asking, you know, even bringing in current events and things and staying in touch in that a little bit with what is going on in college students' lives, and maybe knowing about the people they follow on social media, just asking very open-ended questions about what they're looking at, what they're experiencing, who they're following, and then seeing where they let that door lead can be really helpful for relationship building.
How do you see people in your generation following after God? How do you see people wanting to serve God and wanting to have a Christian worldview? How do you see that? How do you see it?
Yeah, I see it. And it's so easy to say we don't. And in a lot of places, there's not. And in a lot of places, it's really sad to me to watch my peers just so obviously searching for something that they haven't found, whether they place that in relationships or what degree they're getting or what job they're going to get post-grad. Everybody's looking for something, and it's really sad because I do notice a lot of people not finding. But I do also know a lot of people who have found it, and they have that secret to happiness, which is not really a secret at all. And the happiness or the secret to joy is just the gospel. It's simple gospel, just the fact that my life's not the same because Jesus has made me new, and everything I do now has changed because of who he is and how he loves me. And that stands out too. And I think in a world where we can often focus on the bad and focus on those who are struggling, there are also those who are having really healthy, not perfect relationships, but healthy relationships with God, and who aren't perfect, but they're seeking and they're trying to stay on that path toward him. And so just encouraging, again, in your local church, offering your home, opening your table to those people who are following the Lord will then encourage them to go back to their campus, back to their classrooms, back to their communities, and share that with the people with whom they interact.
How has your faith sustained you as a person who is going through college, who is becoming an adult? Because there are so many young people who leave their faith. When they graduate from high school, they think, okay, I don't want that anymore. We hear about young people deconstructing their faith. How has that not been your story?
There's several times where it almost has been. There's been a lot of times where college, it leads you to ask a lot of really hard questions because you have so many people throwing opinions and information at you, and you just think, okay, I know I'm supposed to walk out of these 4 years different, but how? And there's been a lot of times where I've had to ask really, really hard questions. But what's been so vital is just asking them with other people, asking them to the Lord, and just not being afraid to bring those questions to him and talking to my parents about it, talking to my siblings, professors that I trust, just what I've learned and what I'm asking, because there are a lot of people who walk into college who have a lot of hurt from churches, from their childhood. You know, I walked into college leaving my childhood church, which was really hurtful, and it was scary to join a new one, but now I am, and I'm considering ministry, and just looking at how God has just redeemed all those things, not because I just ignored them or pushed them away and just pretended that my feelings didn't exist, but because I realized that God created my emotions. They're not the truth. They're not the ultimate gospel that I'm searching for, but they are a powerful tool that he's given me. And just acknowledging them and realizing that I can ask questions and I can find a place in community where other people are asking questions too, and we can do it together, looking at scripture, looking at what God has said about it. I realize more and more each day that God is loving and he's the only place that I ever want to be. And so why would I leave?
Well, how has your relationship with God just directed your future aspirations? Tell us about your walk with the Lord.
So the year from now, it's basically a cliff with a very dark pit underneath. At least right now, that's what it looks like. I'm thinking I have to wear contacts because I can't see very well. How am I going to pay for them? I don't know. How do I get health insurance? How do I pay taxes? I barely know how to get my car inspected. I don't know how to change a tire. How am I supposed to find a job if I can't even get an internship sometimes? And those questions are at the front of pretty much everyone fresh out of college mind, except if you're a business major. They have it, you know, they get their jobs lined up pretty nice. So go them. But I think what's so important and what I have to tell myself every day, even if I don't always feel like I believe it. It's just that I know that God knows what's on the other side of a year from now, and I know that he will sustain me. Because thinking back to 3 years ago, getting dropped off at college, scariest, hardest day of my life. And look at it now, like God has just provided so much greater than I can imagine, whether that's growing closer to him or finding my best friends across the hall from me in the dorm I didn't want to live in. And now looking at that in these past 3 years, I'm like, these are the best 3 years of my life. I don't know how it's going to get any better, but I know it will. And I know that I just have to take each day as it comes. And I think, you know, my parents have been really gracious with me, not being super pressuring, but also having expectations about finding a job. They want me to be successful. Well, you know, I want to be successful in a godly way. And so just giving them space to figure it out, and you will figure it out. It will be okay, I promise.
Well, what is there one scripture that you can share with us as we're finishing that's been particularly encouraging to you?
Yeah, I think just in Psalms it says, those who know you trust in you, Lord, for you have never forsaken those who seek you. So keep seeking and he will never forsake you.
Okay, well, I have nothing to add to that. Folks, my job here is done. I am feeling really good. Listen, this is a lot of hard work, and you and I have worked really hard, and we have trusted God through all of that to provide hope and healing for our relationship, and it is one of the greatest joys in my life. I am so proud of you, and I love you, and there is hope. There is hope for young people today. Listen, we'll see you here next time. In the meantime, may the Lord bless you and keep you and make his face shine upon you. And we'll be here prescribing more hope for healthy families.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.